Okay, good morning, everyone. We're going to start with a tree and its fruit. No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does it bad tree bears good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. Sorry. Good people brings good things out of the good stores up into their hearts, and evil people brings evil things out of evil stored up in their heart. For out of this overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. The wise man and the foolish builder. Sorry. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As those who come to me and hear my words and put them into practice, I will show you what they are like. They are like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid foundation on a rock. When the flood and the torrents struck the house out, but could not shake it because it was still built. But those who hear my words and do not put them into practice, like a man who builds a house on a ground without foundation, the moments in the torrent struck and the house it collapsed and it destructed was completed.
Morning. Those bits in the Bible are from Luke 6 that Audrey just read, and we're carrying on the series looking at Luke and looking at Jesus' ministry and what he spoke to those listening. And the people who are listening to that bit that we just heard they're people that had chosen to come and listen to him. So they weren't the Pharisees, they weren't the people in the church who were there maybe anyway. They were people that had come to hear Jesus speak and his disciples. So a bit like us right now. Maybe some of us are like, yeah, I'm on board, I'm following him. Some of us are just a bit interested in what Jesus has to say and would like to find out more. So we're probably a good crowd, similar crowd to who he was speaking to. So we can take this as a message for us. We don't have to sort of think outside the box too much. Also, nightmare to preach on these. They're so good. You know when Jesus just nails it and you're like, well, what do I do with that? It's so well said. And even that little play that you guys did, you're like, brilliant. It just sums so much up. So feel free to forget what I say and just go back to the passages because they're just so great. So I'm going to try and look at them and look also at the two stories. But also I think there's quite a lot of space in these stories for us to get quite a misinterpretation of Jesus and a relationship with him. So I'm going to look at that as well. So the first story that Audrey read was Luke 6, and it was about a tree and its fruit. And we heard about the good fruit coming from a good tree and the bad fruit coming from a bad tree. Last week, do you remember, Darren spoke, and he spoke about hypocrites, and he spoke about someone who had a big plank in their eye, looking at someone else who had a little bit of sawdust in theirs. So it was somebody who was busy going along criticizing other people, but they couldn't see their own problems because they were too busy looking at everyone else's problems. And Jesus was naming that and saying, that's a hypocrite. That's not a good place to be. Like he was wanting people to look at themselves first. So we're moving. This is in his same breath. This is his same talk. So he's just said that. And now he's talking about the fruit and the tree. So it's like he's saying at the beginning, you say one thing, but it's not like, look at yourself. Like there's an inconsistency. There's something that sort of doesn't add up with how that person's acting. And now he's saying, actually, but there is something that can add up. Like, obviously, a good fruit comes from a good tree. Yeah? It's kind of pretty straightforward. A bad fruit comes from a bad tree. And you can look at the fruit and you can tell what type of tree it is. It's not complicated. You wouldn't find a banana on a coconut tree. It would just be ridiculous. So he's saying you can look at each other and we can see the fruit and we can see what that means about that person. And I'm just going to tell, this is, I don't know if any of you read this, it's such a brilliant book. It's by Philip Yancey, Soul Survivor, How My Faith Survived the Church, which we probably all need to read. And he just talks about some different people in his life that have helped him just keep his eyes on Jesus when following Jesus in life and Christianity and church and everything can be quite muddling sometimes. These people have helped him come back to remember who God really is. And in that, I think they're beautiful stories of this fruit that we're talking about, of the good fruit. And yeah, life is complicated and there's a lot of pain and things that go wrong and there's bad fruit, evil trees. But also there is so much good fruit and there's so much to be inspired by and people's lives that are so beautiful and reflect Jesus. And they make us, this book makes me want to follow Jesus with every part of my body and my life. And so I'm just going to read you, I could read you the whole book, but this is about a bit about a couple called the Brands, and they were doctors. And Paul Brand, he grew up as a sort of missionary kid. So his parents were Christians and they lived in India. And they, I mean, just reading about his parents, they just started lots of just small projects, getting to know people and helping, like, where if people's kids weren't wanted, they'd get thrown away and they would look after them and help them go through school, and just loved these people so well. And this guy, Paul Brand, he grew up with that fruit around him, seeing that goodness. And he ended up training and becoming an orthopedic surgeon. And this is a bit of a story about this guy, Philip Yancey, who wrote the book. And he goes to India and visits this man, Paul Brand, and his wife, Margaret, to see what they're doing. And they've worked a lot with people who have leprosy. So these people are very ill and their bodies are falling apart. And a lot of people don't really want to know them. And this is a story about a guy that they visited. Said, later that day, I visited Sadan, another former patient. He looked like a miniature version of Gandhi, skinny, balding, with thick spectacles perched cross-legged on the edge of his bed. The door to his modest apartment was open and small birds flew in and out, and a mangy dog lounged on the step. Sadan showed me his feet, which ended in smooth, rounded stumps instead of toes. I met the Brands, who are the doctors. Too late to save these, he said. But they gave me shoes that let me walk. In a high-pitched sing-song voice, Sadan told me wrenching stories of past rejection, the classmates who had made fun of him in school, the driver who had forcibly thrown him off a public bus, the many employees who refused to hire him despite his training and talent, and the hospitals that turned him away with a brusque, "We don't treat lepers here." When I got to Vellore, which is the place, I spent the night on the Brand's veranda because I had nowhere else to go, said Sadan. That was unheard of for a person with leprosy back then. I can still remember when Dr. Brand took my infected, bleeding feet in his hands. I had been to many doctors. A few had examined my hands and feet from a distance, but Drs. Paul and Margaret were the first medical workers who dared to touch me. I had nearly forgotten what touch looked and felt like. Even more impressive, they let me stay in their house that night. And this was when even health workers were terrified of leprosy. Sadan then recounted the elaborate sequence of medical procedures that he went through. He spoke for half an hour. His past life was a catalogue of human suffering, and the stigma continues to this day. Just recently, he had sat in a car alone and watched his daughter's wedding from a distance, afraid his presence would disturb the guests. As the Brands and I sipped our last cup of tea in his home, just before leaving to catch the plane to England, Sadan made this astonishing statement. Still, I must say that I am now happy that I had this disease. Happy? I asked, incredulous. Yes, replied Sadan. Apart from leprosy, I would have been a normal man with a normal family, chasing wealth and a higher position in society. I would never have known such wonderful people as Dr. Paul and Dr. Margaret, and I would never have known the God who lives in them. And what I think is extraordinary about this story is that we can all be like, well, they were orthopedic surgeons in India. I can't do that. But actually what this man, the bits that stuck out for him were that they let him stay in their house, and they touched him, and they were hospitable to him. And that's something we can all do. We can all that's good fruit. That's them choosing to show that love of Jesus that's inside them by touching someone who everyone else thinks is disgusting, or letting someone in their home who doesn't normally let, you know, people don't normally let in their homes. And that love, that good fruit, it changed him. Doesn't that make you want to do that stuff? And Jesus says, he says, out of the overflow of our heart, our mouth speaks. So, and I think, you know, he talks about actions, about what we do. So there's this connection that he talks about. This is sort of before psychology and everything else. So it's like what we do, how we live, how we speak. It's literally like a window to our heart. And maybe we can't see that with each other, but Jesus can. He can see our motivations. He can see our heart. And how we go about sharing our lives is actually more about also a reflection to other people of what Jesus' heart looks like. It's showing them who he is as we share, like these guys. They weren't necessarily going around preaching the gospel. What they were doing is showing the love of Jesus to people, and people saw that. They saw where the good fruit came from in here, came from their heart, came from who Jesus is. And if we go around saying, oh, I love Jesus, I know Jesus' love, and we do none of this, we don't touch people, we don't share our lives with people, then we need to question ourselves. Like, are we kidding ourselves? Do we really know the love of Jesus? We might know love. We might know love from the movies. We might know all different kinds of love. But do we know the love of Jesus? What is the love of Jesus? What does that look like? And that's what we'll be looking at in this series. That's what we're trying to get our heads around, is not the love the world talks about, not romantic love, the love of Jesus Christ. What does he say that love is? And how do we share that love with the people around us? Because it's only that love that is going to change people. It's only that love that will show who he is and bring them to know him. When another way, so we looked at the plank, we looked at in their eye. Jesus talks about lots of different ways that love can look like. Can anyone shout out, just think of what might be one or two ways that Jesus talks about how he shows his love, or how we can do that? Like, really simple. Yes, Tina Worrell, thank you. Love your neighbour. Any others? Being kind, yeah. What other ways that Jesus tells us we can love people, show love? By forgiving people. Love your enemy. Wash their feet. Yeah, so these are all ways that we can see and recognize the love of Jesus. And he doesn't leave us sort of going, oh, I wonder what love might look like. You know, in the world, it's sometimes quite hard to know what love looks like, and it's a word that's thrown around. Jesus isn't letting us off the hook that easily. He is nailing it. He's telling us what his love looks like. We can't pretend we don't know. If we read the Bible, he's really clear at what his love looks like. And I remember, I think I've mentioned it about 1,000 times, but I used to live in Hong Kong with drug addicts. And there was a time, and I sat there for quite a while, and it's a very close community. We all shared life together. And I remember about a year or two in, hopefully they'll never hear this talk, but I remember being like, I don't know if these people are Christians. I don't know. I felt so lonely, so misunderstood, so sad. Like, people were so busy serving God that no one smiled or said hello to you. And I was literally like, maybe God's not here. Maybe this is a cult. Maybe I need, like, this is so far from the Christianity that I had known. Like, I really questioned it. I was really like, God, is this you? Is this... And someone, and then I sort of opened the Bible flippantly, as you're not meant to do, and read this bit about the fruit and the good fruit coming from a good tree. And I looked around in a different way, and I was like, okay, Jesus, what am I looking at? And I saw people being healed physically, people being healed emotionally, people being delivered of demonic strongholds, God providing because we prayed. I saw a safe place where people hadn't been safe before. I saw people learn to trust each other. And suddenly by seeing this fruit, like being like literally almost just seeing the apples, I think I'd lost where the tree was. By seeing that fruit, being like, yeah, that is Jesus. And we might be doing a lot of it wrong. We might not be good at saying good morning to each other. But without a doubt, this is God's work because I can see it. I can see the fruit in front of me. And so when I have bad days, rather than go, oh God, you're not here. Oh, what's happening? Oh, I feel crap. Oh, I can be like, no, look at God. Look what he's doing. Look at the goodness. Look at the fruit. And then you're like, I can walk this. I can keep walking. Like that play that we saw, like on rock. It's on what Jesus has done for us. It's on his love and what he's doing. That's the rock. And then you're like, okay, I'm not going to just walk off. I'm going to keep going because I can see his fruit. And I know where that comes from. That comes from Jesus Christ. Now, this is where I got complicated reading this, because you get to this point in, with both of these stories, and you're like, basically, therefore, let's all be good people, good Christians, and when then we're saved, aren't we? Good, good, good. We're saved. Hooray. If we're all nice, if we all do what Jesus says, and we're all good, is that it? Is that what this is about? And you're like, and often it feels like that, and often we read the Bible, and we're like, basically what it's saying, I've got to be really good. And at the Arch, when we're down the road, we really struggle with this. And people are like, oh, I can't be a Christian, I'm not good. Like, oh, that's what this sounds like on the surface, doesn't it? And it does. It does sound like that. Good fruit. We want good fruit. But the key is where that fruit comes from, isn't it? Like, is it coming from me trying to earn my salvation? Is it coming from me because I just want people to think I'm a good person? Is it because then I think God will love me if I'm good? But actually, it's when it comes from that place that it comes from who Jesus is. And I'm going to just read this little bit by Martin Luther King. And he, I'm so bad with my history, but he was in America as part of the African American Civil Rights Movement. And he was part of the change that happened there. And he talks about, he's just been in prison, and he's leading a movement against horrific people that are racist, that are killing people, and he's got a wife and he's got a daughter. And so he's someone that we can, he's quite an easy person to see good fruit. You know, he fought the battle, he really went for it, he changed how people saw each other. But that's the fruit. Where does that good fruit come from? And this is what Martin Luther King, he wrote, he said in a sermon. And I got to the point that I couldn't take it anymore, and I was weak. And I discovered then that religion had to become real to me, and I had to know God for myself, and I bowed down over that cup of coffee. I will never forget it. I prayed a prayer, and I prayed out loud that night. I said, Lord, I'm down here trying to do what's right. I think I'm right. I think the cause that we represent is right. But, Lord, I must confess that I'm weak now. I'm faltering. I'm losing my courage. The wind, that wind, it's coming. It's at him. And it seemed at that moment that I could hear an inner voice saying to me, Martin Luther, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for the truth. And, lo, I will be with you, even until the end of the world. I heard the voice of Jesus saying, still to fight on. He promised never to leave me, never to leave me alone. No, never alone. No, never alone. He promised never to leave me alone, never to leave me alone. And he knew that truth for himself. He knew that Jesus was with him in this fight. And so he didn't get thrown over. He didn't get blown over by the wind, because it was Jesus that was spoken to him that he had in his heart. So how do we get out of being do-gooders? How do we get out of this thing that, in the end, it's about being good? It's about doing this stuff, you know, letting people in our houses. It's about touching people who have diseases. Is that it? Okay, this is where I had to do a lot of thinking. So I think the difference is when we think like that, what we're thinking is, okay, this is a set of rules. This is this book. This tells me what to do. And we maybe forget that Jesus Christ is a human being. He is God, and he is human, and he's alive. He's someone we can talk to and interact with and know. He's not a written contract that says, do this. He's someone we can relate to. So we have to step back into that place of being like, he's not a wish list. He's not a do-gooder kind of, yeah, he's a person that we can speak to now, that he's alive, he rose again, he's alive. And so in essence, like anyone, you can get to know them. You build trust, you build relationship. And we do that with him as we get to know him, as we walk with him, as we go through experiences. But he's not just a friend. He's also God. And this makes it different. This makes our relationship with him extraordinary. When you think of different types of relationship, sometimes, and I know as teenagers you might think that means romantic. That's not what we're talking about. So relationship, where two things, two people connect. That's all we're talking about is connection. So when I say relationship, I mean connection, yeah? And there are different ways that there are connections. So there's like an obvious one is, you know, like a football. You sign a contract, footballer will sign a contract to a team. They're connecting, they're saying, this is a relationship between this football team and this footballer. And they're saying, I will join that and I will do it for this amount of money. I'll be on this many TV adverts. I'll play this many games. I'll be loyal to your team. You know, they're walking in saying that I want this relationship and this is what it looks like. Yes. Or, not going to go into it, you can talk to Paul, but the EU, which is at the moment, you know, that's, do we want to be in that? This is the contract. This is what it will look like. Maybe it won't look like that because there's lots of ambiguity. But we're not going into it being like, yeah, just part of the EU. We want to know what that means for us. It's important what that means before we choose if we're in or if we're out. We want to know the detail. And I think it is the same but different with Jesus. So he hasn't said, here's a list of rules. He said, I want to be in a relationship with you. I want to know you. I want to love you. And if you want that, if you want to say yes to that, this is what love is. This is what it looks like. It looks like loving my neighbor. It looks like giving, not just lending, giving away. It looks like all these different forgiving people. This is what a relationship with Jesus Christ looks like. You don't have to do that. No one has to do that. You can come in freely, you can leave freely. But this is what it is. So when we, in the passage we just read, Jesus says after the fruit story, he says, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I say? So when we say Lord, Lord, we're saying, I know you, I'm crying out to you, I'm talking to you, Lord, Lord, we're using his name. It's intimacy, and respect. It's a connection there, isn't there? Though you'd assume there's some sort of relationship if we're crying, Lord, Lord. And yet he's like, you do not do what I say. So there's a complete, like we had earlier, a disconnect with what that means. So I'm trying to use a football analogy now, which I really am not a big fan, but, you know, trying to play the audience. So, sorry if I get it all wrong, but a guy called Luis Figo. Figo? Yeah? So he was a player for Barcelona. Stay with me. I'm going to keep it really simple. He was a player for Barcelona. So, like we said, he signed a contract, signed a deal. This was his team. This was who he was playing with. However, according to everything that I've read, this was sport's greatest betrayal. And he turned his back on the contract that was signed, and he drew one with a new team, Real Madrid, who are like enemies as well. So, and it wasn't that he just, at the right time, moved over. There was a time that he was unfaithful to his team, to Barcelona, that he had signed that contract for. So much so that the new president of Barcelona described it as immoral, adding, I'll not forget this. Whoever is responsible for this will pay for it. We'll see how and when. Figo gave me the impression this morning that he wanted to do two things, make more money and stay with Barcelona. He thinks money can do everything in this life. Which is quite an interesting analogy, because obviously money is also one of the biggest pulls of why we all go, okay, Jesus, you're here, but I'm just going to like do this as well. I'm just not going to trust you with this one bit of my life. I'm going to turn away from you a little bit. And I want to use the word infidelity, because actually I think that's more accurate. When we look at a relationship with Jesus, something we're saying yes to, something with our eyes open, we're saying yes, because he tells us that that relationship means loving him with all our heart, not having idols, not putting money in front of him. So if we're unfaithful to that, if we start playing around in that other stuff, it's actually being unfaithful. It's infidelity. And when we keep it in that bracket of relationship, so, you know, we can think of friendships, we could think of marriage. When people get married, they don't just walk into it going, let's get married, on we go. They're like, no, for better or for worse, for richer, for poorer. You say what marriage means to each other and what that relationship's going to look like. And if you stop doing that, it doesn't mean the marriage is over, but it means that you're not in the relationship that you've said that you would walk in together. And it's the same with Jesus. When we don't love our enemy, when we don't do good to those who hate us, when we don't give to those who ask of us, when we lend money and be like, can you pay it back? When we start judging people, what we're doing is we're looking elsewhere. We've stopped being in that relationship that we've said yes to. So we're coming to an end now. But Jesus has come to these people and he said who he is. People know that this is someone who is saying, you know, that they're the Son of God. Pretty big thing to get your head around. But he's also showing them and telling them very clearly now what that means. If they want to follow him and know him, have a relationship with him, a connection with him, then he's told them what that means. Don't judge other people. Don't talk about people behind their back. Love them. And when we behave like this footballer and we're like, yeah, we're signed up, and we think we can secretly get away with playing for another team, Jesus can see it. When we take control secretly, we're in control. We pretend God's in control. We say he's in control. You know, we've given our lives to him, but we're in control. That's being unfaithful to the relationship with Jesus. And when we give to others, what we're doing, like we looked at the beginning, like these guys, like so many people do here, what we're doing is we're showing that relationship. We're showing the love of Jesus to people. We're not doing it because we're good. We're not doing it to be a good person and be saved. We're doing it because that shows the love of Jesus. It's like a tactile showing love of Jesus. It's not going to save us. We're saved by what Jesus did for us. He died on the cross for us. That's what saves us. But we love others to show the love of Jesus because that's the relationship we've said we want to be in. And we can get it wrong. And Jesus came for the sinners. He came for us. He knows we get it wrong. And he died for us so that we can come back to him. And he says that we will still experience strong winds. We will still have problems. We will still have pain. There will be suffering. That's what that wind was in the story. It was saying, this is going to happen. The wind doesn't stop. That's not what he did. He told us how to stand in that wind when it comes, how to stand in the suffering. And these are the ways of love. And these are the ways of the heart of the Lord Jesus Christ. And they embody what it is to be held in that relationship with him, to love him and to be loved by him. And John wrote, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or a sister in need, but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. This is how we know that we belong to the truth and how we set our hearts at rest in his presence.